Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. It's my pleasure to be joined today by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Thanks, Michael.
So as you were talking...
Sherry is traveling, so she apologizes for not being there.
Great, great. Gwen, I'm glad you're here to be with us.
Me too. There's nothing like participating with Sangha, is there?
No, it's great. It's wonderful. And I think one of you was asking about the sign-up deadline for the email class. And the class starts on May 15th. And the deadline to sign up is the day before, May 14th at 5 p.m. Pacific time.
Good. It promises to be a good one.
Oh, I'm sure. I just love the topic of communication, and it's fascinating because I was actually just on a work call today and there was a communication issue, and I mentioned my favorite quote about communication, which I'm sure I got from practice, and that is that the problem with communication is the assumption that something has been communicated.
Yes. Yeah, the illusion that it has happened, yes.
Yes. So I'm really looking forward to it. I love the Enneagram, and I love this topic, and I think it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah, and it really, really highlights how we suffer because of a lack of communication.
Yes. And I have some announcements, unless there's something else you'd like to start us with today.
Nope, can't wait to hear what they are.
Okay. As we were just talking about, the new email class is going to use the Enneagram to bring awareness to the process of communication. So join Sherry for an exploration of how unexamined beliefs, assumptions, projections, identities, karma, and conditioning hog the information highway.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think beyond hogging, you know, blocking and stymieing and, causing lots of problems, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
And there are still slots available for the new In This Way, I Do Most Deeply Vow to Train Myself retreat, and that is July 6th through 10th in Menlo Park, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area. And August 31st through September 4th in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And as you know, Ashwini, the retreat focuses on the importance of spiritual training in practice and includes guidance with Sherry.
That one's exciting too.
Yes, and you know from experience because you've already done one of them.
We just did it in North Carolina. Yes,
yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Wonderful. And the foundational There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat offers an opportunity to look directly at how we are rejected and punished by the voices of self-hate and discover how to let that go. Sign up now for a retreat in North Carolina in July and at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in California in August. And for these and all other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And a couple of reminders for tonight. To make a show, to indicate your desire to talk with Ashwini, press star 6 and then 1. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started here. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Michael and Ashwini. This is Chris in Seattle.
Hi.
Chris?
Hello. I'm calling in today to just basically snap myself out of conditioning, and I've been dealing with several different things at once, including my mother passed away a couple weeks ago, and then another big piece of something dropped in a week ago today, and oops, I'm going the wrong way. And then the good news is I've been doing practice like I never really have before. And however, today when I went to work, I forgot everything at home, my iPod, my recording device, everything. And so I valiantly tried to resist the voices today, but I eventually spent a great part of the day listening to them instead of good stuff.
So experiencing the suffering that results from listening to the voices, but a tremendous willingness to just call in and get the support that you need to get out of it.
Yes, because it always works. I've called many times in the past, and it's really pretty impossible for me to stay identified when I'm on the call.
Well, and it's so important to know that, right, Chris, and also to do the steps that you know work to get you out of that place of conditioned mind. And there's the awareness that we can't actually make that step without disidentifying to some extent.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah? So I project you made the movement towards this identification, and talking through it allows the disidentification to deepen at some level, to really get clarity around what's going on and to process through it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's basically what I'm feeling. Throughout the day, I went through long portions of this yuck, and then I'd come out for a little bit. I was looking for something to grab onto, and fortuitously enough, the day that another big piece of content came in for me was the day that stop, drop, and text started, and I was rereading my texts and my responses at different times during the day to get a break.
So doing everything possible to redirect the attention so that the voices are not taking over your life experience, however hard they try.
Yeah, exactly. They would dominate for a while, and then I'd snap out of it a bit, and then dominate for a while. But yeah, it's been this last week of, I've been going to bed with listening to my iPod and sitting morning and evening and doing the two-chair exercise morning and evening and listening to stuff all throughout the day. And I think my coach said, it was like authenticity rose to the occasion, basically.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When everything hit, it was there.
Well, it's one of those places where we're grateful that we practice when times are good, because then we have it available to us when it's challenging.
This last year and a half, I've been really focused on just trying to really get my practice more secure and more consistent, and I did in that time, and just in time.
Yes, just in time, it sounds like. Is it helpful to look at the content at all, Chris, or the process at all, or you feel like you have a handle on it?
I have a handle on it. I'm the biggest problem today was I just didn't have all my supports with me.
And so just the act of calling into the radio show and seeking support and feeling that place of openness and disidentification is truly a practice success.
Yes, and it's the first one I could really get my hands on. I've got a reflective listening call later on tonight, but I wanted to get something before then.
Yeah, it's just so wonderful to see how
we can train ourselves to seek the support that we need and to focus on the experience of life that we choose to have instead of letting the voices just take that away from us.
Yeah, seeking out the support, that's something I've done more this past week than I've ever done, just to know that what's there and then really go after it and do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a big help.
Mm-hmm. And a shift, I project, because the voices wouldn't let us do that in the beginning, and to be able to train ourselves to do it, it's just so taking care of the human.
Yes, yeah, taking care of the human has been a big theme.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We just do everything we can to make sure that the person who is the subject of the voice's torture has the best support possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And in that process, you know, our trust in practice and our trust in the practitioner's ability to experience and choose unconditional love and acceptance just grows, right?
Yes. Ever expanding faith.
Ever expanding faith. Constant devotion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's about my time, and I appreciate you guys being here tonight.
Deep gassho, Chris. You take care.
Thank you. I will. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. Ashwini, I just love what you were both talking about there, where we get to that point of something big happens and our first response is, okay, practice. Turn to practice for support.
Yes. It's such a big shift in movement, isn't it? Not to go to conditioned mind, go to unconditional love to the mentor. And to be able to offer that to ourselves is just so, it's so huge.
Yes, it's great. And we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
excuse me. This is Anya. Hi, Ashwini and Michael.
Hi,
Anya.
Hi. This is the first time I've called in. I've been doing this practice for a couple of years, and so I'm a bit nervous.
Welcome. Well, welcome, and take a couple of breaths and just get here.
Yeah.
Yes, it's sort of unnerving when you're unmuted, huh?
Yes, I didn't. You know, part of me was hoping that it wouldn't happen at all, and part of me was hoping it would happen right away.
Uh-huh.
It happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah, isn't that wonderful? Now you get to speak.
Yes. Well, I did have an idea, if I can get myself together enough to talk about it, or what I wanted to talk about. It's been a slow going for me in terms of getting myself to be a regular practicer, and I have been doing better lately, and one of the things that I'm really noticing a lot is how the subtle layers of conditioning I can't think of the word now, but how omnipotent or omnipresent or something like that conditioning can be. And you know, if I move my attention away in one aspect, you know, the next minute I know the sneaky thing is trying another approach, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so you're noticing It's like working with an onion. You keep peeling layers and layers, and as you pay more and more attention, the more subtle conditioning gets.
Yes, and sometimes it feels, then it gets to the point of like, oh my God, I'm swimming in this, just, you know, let me zone out. Like, let me just go away. or, you know, conditioning will start talking about how I'm not doing the practice right and I should just quit. But, you know, I haven't quit. I have not quit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the thing. And
go ahead.
Okay. Well, then what I noticed this morning is that I was listening to some things that I had recorded around appreciation and self-love and conditioning. What I noticed, and this has been happening a lot, where I'm recording or I'm listening, and I'm getting sleepy and I'm distracted and it's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm sort of thinking, well, I'm hearing all this wonderful stuff about me and I'm supposed to be feeling it and I'm not, and I mean, I've known that conditioning is playing a part in that, and this morning I had a stronger sense of that, like, oh, that's conditioning, you know. Right here, you know, right now, getting in the way of my practice. And so mm-hmm. I was kind of hoping to get some insight or some ideas about how to disengage from that, or, you know, like, goodbye.
Uh-huh. Well, it's so interesting, right, Anya, that what you're seeing about conditioning is that there are more and more layers around it, then every time you look at it, there it is in some kind of different form, in some kind of compelling way to get the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is your experience, but it's certainly my experience that every time we look for it, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so part of our practice when we start out is to notice that there are voices. There is this thing we call egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate that has our attention. And so part of our practice is to become aware of it, but part of our practice needs to become how to disengage from it, right? That to affect the attention. And and an interesting thing we notice when we start to do that is how each time we disengage from it, the attention goes back to check to see if we've disengaged. And the place it goes back.
Did you say the attention goes back?
Yes. So I'm listening to the voice that says, okay, I'm sleepy, and then my attention goes to the recorder where I'm listening to something that's really, really wonderful and beautiful. And then there's a moment where the attention goes back to check with conditioning to see if I'm still feeling sleepy. And, of course, conditioning would say you're still feeling sleepy. Right? And so just to pay, you know, to watch that subtle movement of attention between what the voices are saying, where the attention is being trained to go, and that slip back into conditioning to determine whether you've been successful in disengaging the attention or not.
That sounds like a lot.
And yes, and here's the trick around that. So I think it was Eknath Ishwaran who said that the cure for boredom is more attention. Because if you start to say, and this is something you want to experience and find out, is once you start to pay even more attention, you'll find out that we're training the attention on awareness and starting to pay more and more attention to the process, and therefore less and less attention to that which is telling us that we're sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the attention gets focused on what you wanted to focus on, which is the recording. So I'm going to pay more attention to the recording. Let me pay deeper and deeper attention. And then what we're training ourselves to do is not to let attention go to the process that's giving us the narrative of we're sleepy, or you're not feeling the right way, or you're not actually disidentified, or whatever.
Well, it's the same as meditation in the sense that the intention is to focus the attention on the breath and to keep bringing it back.
Exactly.
And the same with the recording. The practice is then what you're saying is to keep bringing the attention back to listening and stop the analyzing about whether or not I'm taking it in or not taking it in or all of the experience of it. Is that, that's kind of what you're saying?
Absolutely. It's exactly the same thing. We keep bringing our attention back to the breath when we notice it's not there, and we keep bringing our attention, or we start to pay closer and closer attention to the recording, and as you said, the process that we're not attending to then is that conditioned process of analysis and judgment and criticism and how you're doing and how you're not doing and what you're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fun to practice.
Yeah, so what I think I'm seeing is that conditioning can be very enmeshed with experience. Like if I have this experience of, you know, I see.
It's you're making such an important and such a subtle point, right? That the story is, if you are attending to the recording around beauty, you should have this experience. But instead
That's
of
right.
dropping body and checking to see whether we're having that experience, we are trained to check into it and say, am I having the experience that I should be having when I'm listening to a recording of beauty? And of course, a mental process has no appreciation for beauty. So a conditioned mind is going to say, no, you're not.
That's funny.
Right?
Yeah.
It is. And so you're right. As we practice more, it gets more and more subtle, and we learn to pay closer and closer attention, which is what the practice is all about.
Hmm.
It gets really once we get past the beating, you know?
It's what?
It gets really, really exciting once we get past the beating.
I'm looking for that place. I've had moments of it, but I'm looking to have more time there.
Yes. Oh, and that's what makes it, that's why we do it, right? We get that, we were just referring to that in the previous caller, where we have this experience of attention and of being with life in a different way. And then once we get a taste of it, we want experiencing it, and therefore we practice more. And the more we practice, the more we have that experience, and life just gets really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like I'm at this place, I'm at this edge where, you know, conditioning can still kind of talk me out of practice, but, you know, like there's this turning point that's happening here. So I can't find the right words, but...
It's like a tipping point, we call it, right?
Tipping point.
Yeah, and it's so important not to quit now, because... It's sort of documented fact that you quit just before the breakthrough happens, right? At just when we know we're going to get to the other side, that's when conditioning escalates to the point where it wants us to quit. And then when we move through that point, we're at the top of the mountain and, you know, there's a whole new world waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so lots of recordings to that practitioner to encourage that person to keep going because she's really excited.
Yes, I will.
Yes,
that was very helpful, Ashwini.
Thank you, Anya. Call again, and maybe next time you could talk to Sherry and update her on how your little experiment is going.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You take care.
You too.
Thanks for joining us, Anya. You're listening to Open Air. It's our pleasure and privilege to have Ashwini with us tonight. And we have another caller here, Ashwini.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa from Pennsylvania.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi. Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing really good. I'm excited about calling in. It's been a while since I've gotten through, so it's really fun and fun to talk and participate. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking at, and in 5 minutes, I've been looking lately at a tendency that I have to show up for other people, especially when it comes to practice opportunities. Like if I know someone else is relying on me in the opportunity, but that I have a tendency to cheat myself and not show up when the practice opportunity is only for me. And I think that there's a karmic piece to that about how I put other people before myself. But what I've noticed lately is that, like, I even will sabotage some things that are just for me. And it's very interesting because it came up for me in a way that was kind of like in a big way. But also, it's interesting. I don't know why, but I'm not upset about how it's come up for me, but I'm very interested in how it's like I'm seeing this and being honest with myself and honest with other people about this part in a way that before I haven't been honest about. And something about being honest about it is actually very freeing, but I'm still trying to figure out what to do to work with this.
Uh-huh. Well, so the interesting part, right, Lisa, I think what you're identifying is a karmic orientation, and if I understood you right, it's the orientation to put others over yourself and to some extent sabotage what would take care of you, as a consequence. And the interesting thing you said to me is that I do that, and I project what you're seeing is that it is karmic, it is an ego identity, and it's not authentic.
Yes.
And so being able to see that it's karmic and not what your heart wants is liberating, isn't it? Because you're not taking ownership of ego as who I am.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I also can see that sometimes when I say that I put other people in front of me, like the harsh part of this, that once again I'm not upset, I'm kind of intrigued, but the harsh reality of that is I put conditioning in front of me. Do you know what I mean? Like I think I caretake conditioning a lot. Like I feed it and I care for conditioning, you know, and it's kind of jarring to see that. Like it's unsettling to see that that's happening. You know, I don't have to beat myself up over it, but it's nonetheless disturbing. You know.
Well, and you know, Lisa, it's such a precious insight. And if we could reframe it a little bit, we could still be part of that process that we're looking at, right? Because what we don't see is conditioning is taking care of conditioning. And the only thing that our attention is on that, right? We identify with one aspect of that and think it's me, I'm doing this. But if we really look at it, there's an identity that, it's all an ego maintenance system, right? So it's just two aspects of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's true.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So we don't own any of it. We don't have to own either side of it. We just take responsibility for not colluding with that system.
Yes. And so what I notice is it's almost like I surface from time to time and have this clarity. And then and then it goes away. And then I go under, and then usually it takes some really big, like I'm really identified and I'm really in pain, and suffering, and then something kind of slaps me, and then I get this clarity, and then, you know, and so part of me is thinking, like, I don't want to lose this clarity again, because I this is really it. This is really me seeing everything. And then there's also this, okay, now what do I want to do with this moving forward, as far as, you know, I do want to show up for myself. It's very, frustrating or disheartening to not, like, to take an email class, for instance, like there's a new one coming up, to take an email class and to not do the class. You know what I mean? Like that, I can't stand, it drives me crazy. Like, I sign up for the class, I want to be in the class, I want to participate, and then, you know, I don't do the class because only I would know. You know, it's one of those situations where there is no person relying on me other than me, which I realize is important, but obviously in my karma, I don't prioritize me as someone who needs to show up for me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Lisa. We believe that we're not worth it, right? We believe the voice that dismisses who we are. That's the that we're colluding with. That somehow behind all of this, it's not really about not showing up, but believing the self-hate that says it's not worth showing up for this person.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
because
that's true.
That's one place. And so if we are looking at it from that perspective, we wouldn't show up if this person doesn't deserve things to be, you know, showing up for. And perhaps what might be a way to practice with it is to look to see, first of all, who she is, right? And all of the ways in which she deserves to show up and participate, because she wants to show up and participate. And then to assist her by, you know, truly having a conversation with the mentor, or to recruit the person who could assist her to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Hmm. Yes, yeah.
Right? Because if ego is showing up, then ego doesn't want to participate. If someone who doesn't want to participate is showing up, it's not going to change anything. But there is
someone who
wants to participate. And really getting in touch with her and allowing her to do it and providing her all of the assistance that she needs to stay the course, that might be something to explore.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think in listening to you, that the thing that's key is that that she's worth it, you know, that she's worthy, that she's someone who is allowed to, you know, who's valued. And I think that, I don't know, I guess conditioning just doesn't allow me to have a really great relationship with her, to allow her to have what she needs. You know, somehow it keeps me occupied with everything else and everyone else and every other excuse, and doesn't really allow for that relationship for me to care for her, you know?
Yes, because that's the person, you know, if the authentic impulse is to be helpful and to assist, then we could recruit that authentic impulse to help the person who wants to show up. In other words, the practitioner could, or whoever it is that can help, shows up that person has an experience of being loved, of being deserving, of being worthy of having someone show up for her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we have those parts in ourselves.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Well, and so what I want to do, and I'll check back in another time, but what I'd like to do is, you know, use this upcoming email class as an opportunity to show up for myself, you know, to really make a commitment to that and to do that. You know, I feel like this is a good way on the radio show to just kind of make that commitment, you know. but that's what I would like to do. That's what I would want to do.
Yeah, and really just explore between now and the email class, explore with the recording and two-handed conversation with a mentor, however you want to do that.
which is explore all the reasons and record the reasons why she is worth it. Then mm-hmm. listen to it and see if you can record all the reasons why she's worth being supported and what you're willing to do in order to show up for her.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That sounds like it would be really, I want to do that. That sounds good.
Yeah, because going up against the karmic orientation directly isn't helpful, right?
Yes.
Because it's
yeah.
not an intellectual exercise. It's not a mental exercise. There's someone here who has listened to that conversation that and believes it so deeply that till she has a different experience of herself, of being worth it, of being supported, you know, it might not change the orientation.
Mm-hmm. No, that is so helpful. Yes. Yeah. Great. All right. Great. That's great. Thank you so much. Really. Thank you.
You take care, Lisa.
You too. Thanks, you. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Lisa. Ashwini, we're going to break here and hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be right back.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
This year's theme is training to live in this here now. In any training, having a personal trainer helps tremendously. We can think of Zen Awareness coaches as personal trainers. The coaches have been trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching with any number of life issues or awareness practice in general, with special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to Living Compassion, having a coach also supports practice. To request a Zen Awareness coach, visit sanghamarket.com. Go to Services, under All Categories. Click on the little monk at the bottom, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Ashwini.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jim and Sharon.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
How's it going?
Good. How
are you? Good. This is really great. I get intimidated thinking about talking to Sherry. this is great. I just also was really inspired by the person saying how much they had practiced over the past year, and particularly I was really inspired hearing about having the two-chair exercise two times a day, that just sort of compassion that person was showing for themselves really was touching, I guess, for me. And another thing that helped me, I guess, was I've heard it said, I've heard Sherry said that, you know, just the act of calling in is, you know, that process of showing compassion, and that was kind of this was kind of one of the things that I heard discussed. And when I've heard that before, I've kind of gotten it intellectually, but and then there's been also kind of been this voice that said, yeah, you know, that's great, but like, let's get to the content, you know, let's get to like, you know, really helping me about some issue. But I kind of got it, I think on a deeper level that is just, you know, being there for the aspects and being there being there for myself, you know, that just that process is just letting everyone here know, like, hey, you know, I'm on your side, and you know, that in itself, you know, regardless of I guess what gets talked about or what gets worked out is I don't know, great. it's inspiring for me.
So just recognizing, not at an intellectual level, but on a deep visceral level, that it is possible to just show up, and the act of showing up is an act of compassion, and we're moving out of a conditioned orientation to one of unconditional love and acceptance.
Yeah. I think I was looking at this last night, and I think that a lot of just sort of aspects, especially, I get identified with a young person a lot, and then when I'm worrying, which is kind of, you know, conditioning's way of, quote, helping, in air quotes, I think a lot of the suffering that's accompanied by the worrying, there's this almost illusion that, like, oh, the suffering is just over the content that I'm worried about. But when I kind of am tuned into it more, the suffering is really me or an aspect saying, am I going to get abandoned because you're worrying about this thing so much?
That sounds like a big insight, that there is that in paying attention to the process, what you're tuning into is the suffering is the fear of abandonment, not the worry over the content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that kind of is a good sort of segue to one of the things one of the processes I'm looking at now, kind of wanted to talk about briefly. But I don't know if there's a experience that you can maybe relate to with this. But when I was at the monastery, I noticed, you know, I get overwhelmed almost by how much self-hate there is sometimes. And so conditioning's message is just, oh, you can't even handle it. Like it just sends me this message of overwhelmment, and then it doesn't even have to go into any details just by saying, you know, you're overwhelmed, there's so much self-hate. And but there was a time at the monastery when it just felt really good to stay, I guess, centered is a good word for it, and to just stay within myself. And specifically what that looked like, and I was almost kind of amazed by it, was as I was breathing, especially an inhale, I felt a very almost pleasurable sensation in my cheeks. And so that just made me kind of concentrate on the breath that I had already kind of made that the point of the whole purpose of the visit was just come back to the breath, come back to the breath. That was kind of my theme for what I wanted to work on. And even when I would notice myself getting triggered by something and wanting to get into a relationship with self-hate and like, oh, that person did this and this and this, that sensation, but one time it said to me, just in a very loving way, just like, just stay right here. Mm-hmm. And don't run off and go away. Just stay right here. And I knew what it meant by that was just as you're breathing, I hate to use the word pleasure because, you know, that can get, there's so much around in our society conditioned like lust and things like that. But it was a feeling of safety and home and contentment. And that's probably one of the first time I've had a prolonged experience with not dealing with self-hate and also, and even managing sort of self-hate, like just come back, like don't even go down that road, just come back and stay right here. And one of the ways I described it was, you know, Jim, wow, in a surprise, in a surprising way, like Jim is a good place to be. And
uh-huh.
I know that that experience is there for me, so I know that it's accessible for me, but since I've left the monastery, I've never been able to find that place of, you know, just when I'm in tune with the breath, and I have been in tune with the breath, there's also the feeling of comfort and safety that lasts, it's prolonged.
Uh-huh.
And I know the monastery was intense, so I know I have not been as intense was my practice. And so, you know, that's a way conditioning can beat me up too. Yeah, that's like sort of one of the processes I guess I'm looking at.
So let me see if I'm with you. So there is the experience of being, in other words, self-hate can come at you with a lot, and the message is it's overwhelming. And what you have practiced before that has assisted you is being able to stay with the breath, and instead of abandonment, which is the issue we talked about before, you were just able to stay and sort of stay with the breath and face it, right? In other words, not get overwhelmed and not run away, but just be present.
Yeah.
And you're still doing practice, but it feels less effective?
There's not that there's not that sensation anymore that goes along with it. So, you know, I don't know if that's a sort of like a checking in with the fox watching the hen house kind of thing.
Well, that's what dropped in for me, Jim, when you said that, because there's an idealized aspect of the experience, and then there's a comparison to that and a failure to that, and it was like we were talking about with the other caller. How do you know that it's not effective unless you're checking with a system that's telling you that it isn't? Right?
Yeah.
What are we consulting to get an assessment?
Yeah, and I guess that's where I kind of go back to that's the body. There's the physical sensations in the body. And a lot of times in my experience, in my limited experience, my cheeks are kind of indicator, a gauge for my relationship with conditioning almost. Like sometimes when I'm feeling really condemned and I'm really, they'll feel kind of hot, almost like a blushing or something like that.
It's interesting, right? In other words, you could keep the practice up and see if you can continue to drop into your body and see what it feels like in this moment, as opposed to leaving this moment, abandoning this moment, and going and consulting an experience that you had. And perhaps you could explore explore sensations that are not in your cheeks, other parts of your body. How about the tip of your nose?
How about the what?
The tip of your nose, right? In other words, in order to move things around, because it's not about the content, right? It's not about recreating a particular sensation or experience. The process that was actually going on was a deep level of presence.
A deep level of what?
Presence. Right? So present. You were here. You were sent with that word. And so what conditioning has us believing is that there was something that we did, some condition, some criteria, some content that caused us to have experience. The fact that what we were attending to was a process. Right?
Yeah.
And the process
we're
attending to is conditioned mind telling us how we should be feeling.
Yeah, what's coming to me right now, I'm even getting goosebumps as I'm saying this, is that sensation, that pleasurable sensation that I had during the inhale when I was centered, that was in the past, and it may, you know, I don't know, it may never happen again, but as long as I'm referencing that, or conditioning is referencing that sensation, then it's got me for the rest of my life. Until I get out of this story that it has to go back. Anytime there's an opportunity for me to be present, I can be referencing this one past experience, and then I'm not present anymore.
Oh,
and it has got me.
Yes, absolutely. In other words, oh, wow, it's such a big insight, right? So long as I'm referencing a story about how it should be, then I'm not here. I'm not here for the experience that I might be having. And wow, if I'm here for the experience I'm having, what kind of sensations could I be experiencing?
Yeah.
What presence might feel like.
Right. Yes. It's like conditioning doesn't know what presence is going to feel like, so it can't.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. And I don't either, for that matter. I have to be willing to just accept it, but be open to it, I guess.
Be open to whatever that experience of presence is.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. If I might reflect, just to make sure we were both on the same page, the insight is that if that conditioning wants to narrow the definition of presence to that sensation in the cheeks, because that's its only way of controlling your experience of being present, right? So it says you're not present, and you're not present. Well, you might be present, but you never know it. You never have that experience because it's locked you into only one flavor of it and locked you out of, therefore, experiencing presence in all of these other different ways.
I'm just gone in a story about what I should be feeling. I'm not feeling.
Yeah, or not feeling, instead of just being with whatever is so.
Gotcha.
Wow.
Gotcha. Well, thank you very much. Gosho to you and everyone at the monastery and all of Sangha. Thank you.
Deep gosho to you too, Jim.
Okay, good night. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jim. And I think we have time for at least one more caller, Ashwini.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Ashwini. Hey, Michael. It's Jen in Rhinebeck, New York.
Hey,
hi.
Jen.
Hello. I'm a little surprised, so let's see what's here. I guess something I was seeing in my reflective listening call earlier tonight was around how interesting it is that sometimes I have insights about particular karmic patterns when I'm not looking at those patterns directly.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so feeling like part of it is about just the accumulation of practice, you know, just feeling like, you know, this past week I had a couple of things that are kind of difficult to deal with going on, and it wasn't the same kind of drama that it would have been like 5 or 10 years ago. You know, it was still the same unpleasant experience, but it wasn't the same drama. But then
best
there's a particular...
Charge.
Oh, sorry?
Best charge.
Exactly, yeah. And more practice, you know? It's like, okay, this is happening, and then how can I be with myself as this is happening, rather than this shouldn't be happening?
Yeah. Oh, that's such an important... it's such an important shift, isn't it? That instead
yeah.
of resistance to and having to fix it and there's something wrong, it's simply what it is. And
right.
as a consequence of that acceptance, there is another relationship we could have with it.
Yeah, and I think the old relationship is that as soon as it shouldn't be this way, I've got to do something to fix it. Which is just, you know, in one case this week, it was, you know, a computer problem. It's like, I can't really do much. I can only do so much to fix that kind of thing, you know?
Yes.
Like, some things are beyond my fixing.
If we could adopt that attitude to life, how much less suffering they would be, right? I can't fix anything.
Right. Yeah.
nothing actually to fix.
And there's nothing to fix. And then when I'm not even looking to fix things, insights drop in that help me see through something that previously was categorized as something that needed to be fixed.
Uh-huh. Oh, that is that. That's beautiful. That's the koan experience, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. But a little bit like the last caller was just saying, it's also that sort of like sometimes that insight disappears really quickly. And then it's like, what was that? I know I felt it for a second. I had it. It was all clear. And now it's gone.
But, you know, Jen, I don't know if this is your experience, but that insight actually transformed it. And we know that the transformation happens because over time, the charge of the karma is less.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That it's the same process that I don't have to hold on to it. I don't have to internalize it. I don't have to understand it. When it happens, then it just happens. And there's a transformation that happens, which I have nothing to do about or do with.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's what makes us religious, right?
Totally. I've been saying to friends recently, I'm like, I'm sorry if I'm sounding evangelical, but.
Yes, it's an amazing process. I mean, that conditioned mind has such a limited definition about how things happen. And when we let go of conditioned mind, we can actually tune into all of these different ways in which things happen, where life happens, that through that narrow lens, we can't register.
Yeah, and I think what I'm seeing with this particular insight that dropped in earlier today, it was like it's around dating, and I've been doing my own little workshop around dating, you know, doing some online dating and committing to emailing people, you know, emailing somebody every other night, whether or not they respond, you know, like just do my own little workshop to sort of see through, you know, not even with the intention of having a date, that would be nice, but really to see through all my karma around this. And what happened earlier was I was doing something completely different, not even thinking about this, and it dropped in that there would, if I never had a partner again, it would be totally okay, and it has nothing to do with me. Like, you know, because the old message is that there's something wrong with me, and that's why I don't have a partner. So either I figure out what's wrong with me or I find a person that'll, you know, whatever, all of the stories that go with that. But this was like this clarity of, like, there is nothing wrong with me, and if I don't ever have a partner, it doesn't mean anything.
Wow.
And it was, like, huge. I stopped walking. I was, like, walking, and it was just like, what? And then it was gone, and it felt like I was right back into that person who wants to be in a relationship and wants to see through the karma.
Mm-hmm.
And I can glimpse that it's like, oh, the person who wants to, you know, see through the karma is part of the process, I think.
Yes. Well, there are two things you said that were so important, right? One is we know that identity wants to make gain itself, so the desire to see through the karma is still a desire, right? It's an it's not the fulfillment of the desire. I want to lose weight or I want to stop eating sugar is a personality who never stops eating sugar. Otherwise, the identity of wanting it
disappears. Yeah.
And so in that instant of clarity, there was the wearing away of the karma. I mean, there wasn't a person who felt the need to be in relationship in order to prove that there was nothing wrong with you.
Right.
Right. So the falling away of story allowed you to experience the clarity of knowing that you actually don't need a relationship to prove anything, and that it was just, everything was just fine the way it was. Well, and I project what happened right after that is that the karma tried to reassert itself as you still want that. The clarity was just momentary or whatever it is, and the attention shifts to the story without
coming back to that experience of, actually, when I look at it, it's still as true as it was when the insight dropped in.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I have trouble sometimes teasing apart that wanting, I guess. You know, like, you know, I've definitely, you know, we've talked about it a lot in practice around, like, preferences. Like, having preferences isn't the problem, per se, because we are people, so I'm going to prefer to have, you know, tofu over tempeh, you know? It's just, it's okay to have preferences. But then it's like, what do you do with, like, okay, I think there is somebody there who wants to be in a relationship.
Yes. You know, so to me, it's the question of freedom, right? The moment of clarity said you were free. You were free whether you were okay whether you had a relationship or you didn't have a relationship.
Right.
Now, you can choose what you want to do. You can choose to attempt to be in a relationship because that's what you choose.
Yeah.
Not, you're not controlled by a karmic impulse or a karmic orientation or some karma to prove that until you have a relationship, there's that you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the confusion is, just because the karma falls away and it isn't an ego desire, doesn't mean you can't do the things, the very things that you were doing when it was an ego desire. You just do it differently, right?
Yeah.
From a place of authenticity. Well, I know I'm fine, and therefore I'm not doing this because I need something. I'm doing this because it would be cool to hang out with somebody.
Right.
My life with, or to share dinner with, or whatever it is that the companionship or the partnership that is a preference.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't crush you or make you a bad person or anything else. There's a lot of it, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I think I've been trying to talk to the sub-personality who is the one who does want the relationship. And so far, all I've gotten to is like a teenage girl who is real, you know, it's pretty clear to me that she wants it for those conditioned reasons, you know, like she's looking for approval and acceptance and all of those things. But yeah, I guess it's interesting. I think part of it is maybe that she's just dominated for so long that it's like, the wanting almost feels natural. It almost feels separate from her.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. And so if it's truly a sub-personality to have that relationship with you instead of trying to find that relationship externally and left in that clarity that she doesn't need, I mean, if she needs approval, she could get it from you, get it from conscious, compassionate awareness instead of something external. And the person who gets into relationship does it from an authentic place of choice and not of, you know, hungry ghost.
And if she's not satisfied getting it from me, then it's not her.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, good. I see the time is past. So thank you very much, Ashwini.
Thank you, Jen.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Jen. Ashwini, you still there? Can you hear me?
You seem to go away, Michael. I don't know if I can hear you anymore. But...
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, good. I was just noticing that each show is a special gift to me. And
yes.
Yes, and I received another one tonight, and it's just such a blessing, and to have that and to receive it and let it go is just wonderful.
Yes, it is indeed. We are, as you and Sherry often end the show with, very, very lucky people.
Yes. So thank you for joining us tonight. It was a great pleasure and privilege to have you with us.
Thanks a lot, Michael, and thank you for being here every single week.
Okay. Thank you, Ashwini.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Yes. Bye.